Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. I hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend. Conversations about aid and fighting global poverty usually approach the problem from one of two perspectives. Either poverty is escapable or it is a trap. The very phrase, a cycle of poverty, is a loaded one. Our next guests have dissected the thinking on aid and have written about the effective and ineffective ways of helping the poor, from the simple to the complex. Most of what we think about aid, that many countries depend on it entirely, that it's a simple question of making the right resources available, turn out to be not as right as we would like to think. Joining me now to talk about the economics of poverty are Esther Duflo, professor of poverty alleviation and development economics at MIT, and Abhijit Banerjee, international professor of economics at MIT. They are co-authors now of Poor Economics, a Radical Rethinking of the Way to Fight Global Poverty. Welcome both of you to WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Abhijit, most people, if asked to picture a life of extreme poverty, probably picture a life of starvation. You write about the establishment of the connection between poverty and hunger, and you actually take issue with this link that we tend to take for granted. How come?
Well, I mean, there are certainly people in the world who are starving at any point of time. But if you look at the average person living under a dollar a day, they don't act as if they're starving. If you give them a little more extra money, they don't go out and buy more calories. They might buy, you know, some more attractive food, or they might buy a cell phone, but they don't act as if they're desperate for more calories.
If hunger is not necessarily the problem, then what is?
There are many problems of the poor. I mean, the whole book is about that, but I mean, a lot of them have to do with being discouraged, with not expecting high enough, with being sort of informationally deprived, not knowing which way to turn, not expecting the right things, not aiming high enough, sometimes aiming in the wrong direction, all kinds of things which have to do with being disempowered and disinformed or uninformed.
So, Esther, in terms of aid, as it's usually delivered, or at least as we usually think of it, is part of the answer to scale back on the use of grains, those sacks of rice we think of as being the crux of the war against hunger?
Right. The way we typically think about the food problem in the world is we think it's the hunger problem, and therefore the right answer is a sack of rice. But if the problem is more of a problem of nutrition, which is people are indeed malnourished, but what they're lacking in a lot of cases are micronutrients such as iron or vitamin A or zinc or things like that. And therefore the right policy regarding food might be more to think about how can we make easier for poor people to get the micronutrients they need. So maybe there are some technological innovations that are possible, such as packing the traditional grains with more micronutrients, or importing, for example, the sweet potato in Africa, because the sweet potato is very close to the yams that people are eating there, but it's rich in vitamin A, or packing salt with not only iodine, but also iron, these kind of things.
And I guess this gets to your theme of that poverty is to some degree about the choices that people are making rather than the choices that are available to them. The iodine-fortified salt is in the book as good for pregnant women in India, but not used commonly enough there, even though it's available. So do you have a sense, Esther, of why that choice is made? Are people so aware of that particular kind of salt and its advantages, for example?
Part of the problem is exactly that they might not be aware. So they might not be aware that the nutrition of a pregnant woman is essential for the good development of their child. In fact, there is a saying in some part of India that women should eat very little during pregnancy in order to make space for the baby to properly develop.
Oh, my.
Part of the problem is also that is our natural tendency to procrastinate. So you might even be aware of the fact that it's important for a pregnant woman to eat well for the benefits of the child. But today there are all these compunctions, all these things you have to do very urgently. And so you might think, well, I don't have money today to buy the iodized salt. I'm going to buy the regular non-iodized salt because it's a little bit cheaper and I need the money today to do something else. So even when you're aware of the benefit, you might have a tendency to not necessarily take up the action.
And Abhijit, the first key lesson you draw in your conclusion is that poor people, especially in developing countries, often believe things that are not true or lack critical pieces of information. We just heard some examples from Esther. This has been part of the conversation about fighting poverty for a long time. So what do you do? You know, other examples, use of condoms and the spread of HIV. What's the missing link? We know about the importance of spreading knowledge for a long time. Could it be more effectively used as a key to fighting poverty, especially death and disease from poverty, than it is?
Surely. I mean, it has to be that we can do a better job of conveying information, and sometimes maybe just the way we do it, sort of do it kind of to sort of bureaucratic sounding messages rather than more subtle ways to you know, get it into the system, like through soap operas, for example, might be maybe using the wrong medium. But I think to a certain extent also many of these states have a reputation for saying things which are not true. I mean, or, you know, they guarantee you this and they promise that and they don't deliver. And I think there is a natural tendency for people to then be skeptical of sort of governmental assertions about things. So I think there is a need for the government to also build up credibility in as a reliable, non-manipulative deliverer of information.
Abhijit Banerjee and Esther Duflo with us, co-authors of Poor Economics, A Radical Rethinking of the Way to Fight Global Poverty. And I want to come back to this question of decisions, Abhijit, that you were making, that you were raising before, decisions that people make. You include a story of a man in Morocco who says a television is more important than food. And you noted that food spending has been declining in India, just as televisions and cell phones have become more common. Do they actually get in the way of purchasing food? Do you think stories like that add to the thinking that people are poor because they keep themselves that way and because they make poor investments? I mean, you know, I recoil from this to some degree because it sounds so much like blaming the victims for their situation.
Well, I mean, you're saying two things there, both important. One is, I mean, is it true that the some of the decisions the poor make are not in the interest? And second, should we blame them for it? And I guess I would take issue with, or I know, I'm not. I guess you also don't really want to say it. So with the second, I'm not sure that I don't certainly blame the poor. I think that we. Like when I take medicine, it's not because I actually understand the biology of the medicine that I take the medicine. I have faith in the system that generates those medicines and delivers them to me, and I take them. I believe the doctor. I mostly that probably works because the U.S. medical system is pretty well run. And if you were brought up in a world where many things just weren't what they're supposed to be, you are naturally skeptical. I'm not sure that people actually, you know, we are so much smarter. I think we're just better live in a better regulated world. That's part of what keeps us safe from lots of stupid ideas that otherwise, you know, I'm certainly capable of believing many stupid things. But fortunately, I don't get to have many decisions about my health care or even like, you know, the cereal I eat comes fortified with a bunch of stuff. So I don't have to worry about whether I'm fortifying it with the right things or the wrong things.
And so education. But in writing about education, Esther, And I'll note that the subtitle of the book is A Radical Rethinking of the Way to Fight Global Poverty. You suggest something somewhat taboo, I think, to most people to talk about, which is that we should probably lower our expectations and, in effect, create a two-tiered system for the rich and the poor. What are you getting at?
I don't think we should create a two-tier system. I think what we have now is, in effect, is already a two-tier system, except that there's one tier that's completely useless. What we have now in a lot of developing countries is a system which is completely elite-biased. So you go to school. Now, most children are going to school, and that's great. But when they arrive in school, they get lost very quickly because the curriculum that is being taught to them is amazingly demanding, and teachers plow through the curriculum regardless. So some children who arrive with little preparation or who are a little younger and who may be the first generation learners in their family get lost early on, and nothing is ever done to try to bring them back. And so what we are suggesting is that the curriculum is just at a complete disconnect with the students who are in the school. And the system is kind of all geared towards failure of the vast majority of the children. So this has to change. And one way to change it, one first step to change it is to be a little bit more realistic with the curriculum. To be a bit realistic and say, look, the objective of primary school, of government primary school, is that every child should be able to read and every child should be able to count. So you focus on the basic. And then on this basis, from this basis, you would be able to identify the brightest of these kids and make sure that they have then access to further education. Well, but I think the system in which these kids are educated now is a complete illusion and in some sense a mockery.
Something
needs to be done about it.
We're out of time, but it kind of mirrors the debate that we're having in this country endlessly, it seems, about focusing on the basics of counting and reading and the way it has led to the standardized test regimen and No Child Left Behind and things like that, again, in this country. But we leave it there with some radically rethought ways to fight global poverty with MIT professors Abhijit Banerjee and Esther Duflo, co-authors now of the book, Poor Economics, A Radical Rethinking of the Way to Fight Global Poverty. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.